On the morning of September 26, 1792, several days of cold English rain came to an end. A light wind picked up from the north, and HMS Lion, a 64-gun ship of the line, unfurled its sails and weighed anchor to depart the harbor at Spithead. It was a time of peace for Great Britain, and the First Lord of the Admiralty felt he could spare the vessel for a 2-year voyage to China to ensure that Lord Macartney, the ambassador who sailed on board, would arrive at the court of the Chinese emperor in a suitably impressive fashion. The Lion carried 400 passengers and crew and was accompanied for its journey by the Hindustan, a 56-gun East Indiaman, a merchant ship of the East India Company's fleet, armed as well as many a naval man of war, which carried the members of Macartney's large entourage who couldn't fit as passengers on the Lion, as well as most of the 600 crates and packages of cargo that he was bringing to China as gifts for the emperor. If the voyage should meet with success, Macartney would be the first ambassador from Great Britain ever to pay his respects in China. His lone would-be predecessor, a Lieutenant Colonel Charles Cathcart, had sailed from England 5 years earlier but died at sea on the long outbound journey. Macartney had had a long, if somewhat rocky, career as a diplomat. A courtly and determined man with a square jaw and sharp eyes, he had been knighted at age 27 and in his younger years served as an envoy to Russia, where he would have been made ambassador if he hadn't managed to seduce not one but two women of Empress Catherine's court while in the country. By the time of the embassy to China, he was middle-aged and a bit on the portly side, but still considered a fine example of British manhood. Since Russia, he had served as governor of Grenada and spent a contentious term as governor of Madras. At the end of his service in Madras, he was offered but declined the governor generalship in Bengal. Macartney was proud and optimistic, and imagined himself fully prepared to accommodate the strange customs and practices of the country to which the king now sent him. In excited anticipation of the oriental splendor of the Chinese court, at least as he had read about it in fanciful accounts and extrapolated from his experiences in India, Macartney had prepared the most colorful and grandiose outfit he could muster, a suit of spotted mulberry velvet, as his valet described it, with a diamond star and his ribbon, over which he wore the full habit of the Order of the Bath, with the hat and plume of feathers which form a part of it. Dressed up like a peacock, he felt certain to make a grand impression in a country that he and most of his entourage, to say nothing of his countrymen, had only ever encountered in their imaginations. Macartney's mission was a joint venture of the British government and the East India Company, the latter of which bore its costs. Its primary goal was the expansion of British trade into Chinese ports north of Canton, the same request James Flint had brought to the emperor more than 30 years earlier, with such discouraging results, though some, including Macartney himself, believed that if Britain had sent a royal ambassador to Beijing back in 1759 rather than a mere interpreter, things might have gone differently. Nevertheless, the situation for British traders in China had improved considerably in the intervening years. By 1792, the East India Company's share of the Canton trade had grown to eclipse that of all of its continental rivals. The young United States had sent its first trading ship to Canton in 1784, almost immediately upon achieving independence, but compared to the mighty fleet of the East India Company, which sent 6 ships to Canton for every one of theirs, the upstart Americans still posed no competition worth speaking of. Best of all for the East India Company, in 1784, the British government had dramatically lowered its tariff on tea imports to combat smuggling from Europe, reducing the tax from upwards of 100% to a flat 12.5% across the board, so profits were pouring in. The company's tea imports had tripled, and British cotton textiles were selling well to Chinese merchants in exchange. The London Times in 1791 noted hopefully that the China trade was in the most flourishing state. All English manufacturers find a ready sale there, and the Chinese begin to think that our cottons are superior to their own. Thus, the company itself was actually quite lukewarm about the embassy. Its directors were comfortable in their supremacy, suitably rich, and deeply aware of precedent, or rather the lack thereof, in their direct relations with the Chinese throne. They worried that any new requests from Britain might be taken as impertinence, offending the emperor and damaging, rather than advancing, their trade in Canton. But industrialists in northern England were demanding expanded markets for their goods, so an optimistic Home Secretary made sure that the mission went forward against the company's misgivings.